Good evening, and you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you're keeping well this evening as you tune in and wherever you may be, whether you're tuning in on Midlands 103 FM or indeed on Spotify, Apple or Google Podcasts, you are very welcome to the show. A little bit later on this evening, we're going to be looking at this new High Court division that has been announced, and specifically to manage, I suppose, the volume of cases related to the environment. And we're joined by a lawyer who has specialised in this particular area. But first up tonight, we're going to be looking at the local authority's performance. And to discuss this, we are joined by Neil Foley. And Neil is an inspector in the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, as we know it well. Neil, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you, Aisling.
Now, Neil, in a nutshell, this report that was out in the last couple of days, what exactly is it a report on?
So it's a report where we look at lots of different aspects of local authority environmental functions and essentially apply a performance framework to that. So to give some context, local authorities, would undertake over 200,000 environmental inspections, and it ranges all the way from waste issues, you know, that people would be familiar with, say, littering or illegal dumping, that type of thing, to water quality issues. So the health and quality of our rivers, our lakes, our groundwaters and activities associated with that. And also air and noise as well. So where you would have, you know, potentially air pollution issues or noise from industrial facilities, or it could be from social settings like pubs or clubs or, you know, anything like that. So local authorities have this huge broad remit covering a lot of these different environmental areas within their own local region. So what we were trying to do essentially is look at, you know, all of these different activities that they're undertaking, and to try and come up with a framework at looking at performance. And so we set out then to kind of devise a scheme that had looked at the priorities across these different environmental areas. So as I said, the waste, the water, mm-hmm. the air and noise together. And then also one we call governance processes, which is kind of the administrative and the planning aspect of it. And so different priorities within those areas, and then look at how each local authority did against those.
It sounds like when you outline it all there, it's a mammoth task, and like it's not the local authority's only task.
Absolutely. Like, you know, when you think about it, that even within local authority, you know, we're looking at the environment section, but local authorities will have roads, housing, you know, water services connected with Irish Water, you know, all these other things, libraries and different civic things. So, you know, it is actually only, you know, a partial aspect. But of course, being the EPA, that's the bit that that we're concerned with.
So like overall as a country, like how are we doing? How are our local authorities doing?
Well, what we found, within this assessment report was that just under half, so 46% of local authorities were reaching what we would call the required standard within this framework. So it's a little bit like that kind of thing, like that a lot of good work being done, but more to be done as well. Mm. And I think as well, one of the kind of concerns that we have, and we've highlighted this in our report and in other reports, is that we are actually seeing it like declining water quality across the country. So, you know, we're seeing that there is this gradual decline in, you know, river, lake, coastal and groundwater bodies that is quite concerning.
Do we know why the water quality is declining?
Yes, we have
countrywide. Yeah. Like, if it's not isolated to one area, there must be a bigger problem at play.
Yeah, I mean, there's really good science around this now, in terms of, you know, identifying, you know, what the pressures are and where they're occurring, and it's there's multi aspects to it. And it does vary regionally. What you will find in, you know, where we have heavily urbanized areas, there still is pressure from wastewater treatment. So, you know, sewage treatment in certain areas. You'll also find then in the more rural areas and in specific circumstances, we're finding that agriculture is quite a pressure. And we've identified that within the report as well. And then there can be, you know, other sort of more what you would call regional or even localized issues that would, you know, possibly relate to legacy issues. You know, I'm thinking of things like with the Avoca and where you'd have old acid mine drainage and things like that, which are kind of historic legacy issues. But they're the kind of things that you would see. And as I said, like the science is quite good on this, you know.
And is this like, you know, we hear regularly, particularly in coastal counties, like sewage being released out into the water around the country. And is that the level of problem we're still talking about?
Yeah, I mean, there are still issues, you know, with like it is, in fairness, like we've come very, very far in terms of our sewage treatment, you know, across the country, and the like building of new infrastructure and better wastewater treatment. But also in saying that, there are still sites that require, you know, significant upgrade to the sewage treatment works. Thankfully, a lot of those are in train or there are plans in place. And, you know, that, so like you would hope to see that would be a gradually improving situation as we go forward, as it has been historically, you know.
Now, look, we'll get to Offaly in a second because the report in Offaly is not particularly positive. But for Laois and Westmeath, from my reading of it, not being an expert like yourself, but from my reading of it, Laois and Westmeath came out quite well.
Yeah, you know, they would sort of be sitting mid-table, if you were to kind of refer to it as that, where, you know, they would have received, you know, moderate scores across most of the sectors. You know, would have done reasonably well, as you've said there, in terms of the overall scoring system. Westmeath probably, you know, a little bit better. They would have had a few more excellent scores, in there, particularly around that governance area I mentioned, you know, around reporting and planning and things like that. So doing reasonably well.
And Offaly really, like, it's listed as one of the lowest counties in the country in this report. And like, to put that in context, Dublin is in one of the higher, like one of the highest and the best performing authorities. And when we think of environmental issues and, you know, the cleanliness of water and air pollution, I think most of us think, you know, that you're talking about big urban areas where there's lots of traffic, lots of like awful stuff going into the air, an awful lot of people living in small environment. You know, we think cities, because cities are, you know, made out to be these awful evil things by some. And then you think of Offaly, where like the population is nowhere near Dublin and we have all this beautiful countryside. What are we doing so wrong in Offaly?
Well, you have to remember that this report is looking at local authority performance. So this report isn't an assessment of the environment within each of these local authority areas. Now, we would have EPA reports that would look at those different aspects as well. But in this, we are looking at local authority performance. And maybe in the example you've used, what the way to probably look on it is that whilst, yes, you know, Dublin would have a much higher population, and Dublin City Council came out quite well in our report. But Dublin City Council then, you know, related to that population is much bigger and, you know, would have a much bigger resource as such. One of the things that we've been aware of from Offaly County Council, and certainly not speaking on their behalf, but they have alerted us to, you know, some limitations in terms of resources available to them. And certainly that seems to have come true in what we can see in the different performance areas where, you know, they have received quite poor scores. And we received very limited information, I suppose, from the council on certain areas. And they have, you know, made us aware of resource issues that they've had regarding that. So that's certainly one of the things that that they have pointed to in this.
Neil, when you mention resource issues there in Offaly, are we talking, you know, brass tacks, or is it a lack of staff?
Well, it would have been in relation to staff that they would have highlighted issues to us. But, you know, as I said, I wouldn't be able to speak on behalf of the council in terms of exactly, you know, how that breaks down. And I'm sure, you know, you'd probably be able to talk to somebody from the council with regards to that, you know.
And I ask that, I suppose, because anecdotally, we all went through the recession and we know that local authorities had to cut back, just like everybody else in the country did at the time. And many people are still working on building back up those resources. So, you know, this report, as you say, it looks at the performance of the local authorities in given areas. Offaly has come out quite badly in it. And there is a mention in the report as to, you know, management taking the lead, that the EPA would like to see a more top-down approach in this. And I'm just interested, you say there's a lack of information coming from Offaly. You know, is that something we should be concerned about?
Well, this is like something that we're definitely looking at is, as you said, a kind of a management-led approach and an approach really in terms of looking at priorities. Yeah. So, you know, because as I said at the start, there's a huge amount of environmental functions that are there, you know, for local authorities. It's very difficult, you know, as we all know throughout our own lives, to kind of cover every aspect of what you need to do, even in a given day. So it is all about managing and prioritizing based on what resources you have. In most cases, you know, we're not going to have all of the resources that we would like for environmental issues. You know, it would be the same for any kind of organization. So it is about actually prioritizing what resource you have into those priority areas. And that's what we're really calling for. To have that deployment and that targeting of resource at the right things. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it is about trying to, and this is what we're trying to do with this report, is link resources and activities to environmental outcomes. So this is, you know, really getting to the point of that, well, showing, I suppose, what's being achieved with what your, you know, your activities and your resources, because at the end of the day, the goal is to see improvements or maintain high status in the environment, and that is certainly what we're looking for local authorities to do.
And will, like, is there support available for local authorities? Like, say, for instance, in environmental departments within a county council. They'll obviously, and I've sat across Leash, Offaly, Westmeath County Councils on a number of occasions, and I think I've attended nearly all but of their budget meetings, like of the three counties. I mean, not every budget meeting, but I've been there. I've sat through. I remember there was one Offaly County Council budget meeting that went on one year for well into 9 hours. It was, you know, these things are extraordinary, the level of detail that get discussed. And you wonder then, is each within each, now I'm not asking to speak individually about Offaly County Council, but is each environmental section of a county council or a local authority then battling to have, you know, their section listened to when it comes to budget time and priority time? You know, I'm wondering, is there a more efficient way to do this?
You're probably asking the wrong person there, Aisling, on that. Look, at across public sector, you know, there's a limited amount of money. At the end of the day, you know, it is reliant on taxpayers' money, you know, revenue generated that way. And, you know, you can look at that across the country, you know, hospitals, schools, you know, public services, environment, everything can only get a certain amount of what that, and you'll see that then on a micro scale within a local authority then as well at a local level. So yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, competing interests, and that's again going back to my point where, you know, what we're looking for really then is you know, good targeting, so you may not have the resources that you want. In fact, I would say in most cases, you know, in any factor of business or public mm-hmm. sector, people don't have the resource that they would possibly like.
Absolutely, yeah.
100%. So it is about actually, yeah, it's about targeting then at those areas where you're going to see benefits and trying to, you know, do the right inspection in the right place, as we sort of have as a bit of a mantra, you know.
And like the fact that you're saying that less than half of local authorities in the country are meeting the required standards. Now, we're not even at the point yet where we're doing exceptionally well. You know, we're still so far behind in these matters, even though we're so aware of the importance of tackling environmental issues as a whole. So I wondered, like, is there any consequence here? Like, okay, Leash and Westmeath have fared all right, but they're only midway, and then Offaly is at the bottom of the table, basically. Does this matter? The fact this ranking system, does it have any consequence for a local authority?
Yeah, well, we're looking at a 3-year cycle with this revised framework, and you know, as I've mentioned, it's a revised framework, so it is something that's quite new. So, you know, even the assessment method and the reporting is quite new. And look, with any kind of new system, you know, you would always expect that there's going to be a few bumps in the road as such, you know. So therefore, like, partly I would look at it from the point of view that, you know, it's like bringing in a new examination system. The first students to do it are always probably going to be, you know, under a little bit of pressure to try and fit in with what's being asked. So we would look on it in the sense as well that, you know, I suppose glass half empty or glass half full, but we would see that there's room for improvement here. That the local authorities are now familiar with the system, that they're more aware of the reporting structures that are around this. We're working with them as well in terms of trying to build capacity to look at actually improving in these areas too. So, you know, I think what we would hope to see is that there will be improvements actually in the performance levels across the board of all local authorities. Even those who have done quite well in this system, I think, you know, will probably do better over time as well as the system, you know, establishes itself and also, you know, the familiarity around it and, you know, that better targeting, that better linkage to environmental outcomes comes about. I think that's, you know, again, as I said, that's the real goal. And I think it's about, you know, getting everyone facing in the same direction and looking at the environmental gains at the end of the day.
I do understand where you're coming from. And it does, you know, in an ideal scenario, you would have local authorities looking at these results and going, okay, got to pull up our socks here and do our bit. But if there's not a willingness from a managerial perspective, or, you know, if there's not, if the environmental section of a given local authority is not getting the kind of support or the resources that they need, and if there are no consequences to doing badly in this report, you know, I hate to say it, but do we not need a carrot and stick here as well? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, look, there are, I'll be honest as well, there are other hard lines of enforcement that would be available to the EPA and certainly, you know, would be things that we would make use of. And, you know, these are getting down to kind of, you know, statutory function stuff, things like that. Like, if we were to feel that a local authority wasn't meeting its statutory obligations for the environment, we have instruments there. Which would be, you know, much more hardline legal type instruments, you know, that people might be, you know, thinking of, like, in terms of things like prosecution notices, prosecutions, you know, court cases, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, look at EPA has been down that road, you know, with previous things. This is a different, you know, this is a different aspect in terms of looking at performance. And, you know, there's a spectrum, I suppose, in terms of, without getting probably too much into it, but, you know, if you're looking to make things better, there's a whole spectrum of how you can do that. Some of it is, you know, is the stick, as I've just mentioned, those kind of hard aspects. Oh, if you don't do something, we're going to come after you and we're going to make you do it, you know, which sometimes works, but doesn't always work either. Mm-hmm. You know, we see that in everyday life, in crime and different things like that. The other way then, you know, a kind of, you know, maybe at the other end of the spectrum is the carrot as such. You might kind of wonder, well, where's the carrot in this? You know, you've kind of said, well, you know, if there's no consequence. But this report has received quite a lot of media attention and, you know, has made national media news. And, you know, from that point of view, I suppose that in itself brings a kind of a, well, you know, the public is aware of where somebody's at in terms of performance. You know, you might look over the fence at your peers. You know, I think at the end of the day, people are there. They want to do a good job. And, you know, they like to get recognition for a good job. And that's where this report operates in that space, in terms of trying to, you know, to encourage, you know, local authorities to really try and focus in on, you know, this targeting of resource, this achievement of outcomes, this improvement of the environment overall. And not to say that local authorities aren't doing that, but it's that we now have this standardized system that tries to look at priority areas across the different environmental sectors to try and kind of bring about, you know, I suppose, a common standard and a common viewpoint. And so that's really where we're aiming at with this report and the future cycle of this report.
And the interesting thing about it is, I think the graphics in here from what could be a rather dense report, make it a rather social media friendly report. And I suspect that political leaders in counties right around the country will be looking at them perhaps with a bit of fear, because, you know, once people start showing these things, you know, you've got it there in multicolour how well your local authority is doing. And, you know, it's something that people can use to share their concerns and to the media and to the public alike. But Neil Foley, Inspector with the EPA, thank you very much for taking us through your local authority enforcement report for this year. And of course, if you want to read that report, it is on the homepage of epa.ie. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you are enjoying our show so far this week. Now, last week we spoke with Tom Halpin of the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland about their new initiative, which hopes to or aims to help us cut down on our energy costs at home. And it got us thinking here in the station about the measures that we can make in our own lives. And, you know, we all know these things in theory, but are we actually putting them into practice? Well, I'm very delighted to announce that we have a new member of the Let's Go Green team this week, Chloe Farrell, who has joined Midlands 103 as one of a couple of successful graduates to be placed in stations right around Ireland this year based on their academic achievements. And Chloe is working in the station as a researcher and has joined Let's Go Green as a reporter. So this week we sent Chloe out to ask the people of the Midlands what efforts they're making in their homes to try and cut down on the cost of living.
Some of the changes I've been making, like with my day-to-day life, would be making an extra effort to like turn off switches that don't need to be on, and you know, plugging out things that don't need to be plugged in. And I kind of do like my washing or use a dishwasher or anything like that, like that during the peak hours. And when doing my shopping, I'd make an extra effort to kind of look for the cheaper option and kind of bulk buy if possible. You know, if something's on sale and I know I'm going to use it, I might buy it and freeze it, or just kind of always look for the cheaper option and try alternatives. And I've always kind of considered myself environmentally friendly in regards to like recycling or reusing jars of pasta sauces and stuff like that. So all the efforts, like, nothing's really changed.
So shopping around for fuel is something that I now do, driving past petrol stations looking for better value or price per litre, and also using a fuel card to ensure that I get a further discount. And driving slower and using the eco mode in the car has saved on fuel consumption. I also see it as having a benefit for the environment in that I'm using less fuel overall. I'm now shopping, looking for better value, looking for better offers, and also bulk buying and using own brand products more. I'd also be cooking from scratch more often, with less takeaways and fast food deliveries to the home. By shopping local, I feel like I'm buying produce that traveling less distance. So for the environment, there's a saving there, and also it's supporting local jobs as well.
Our heating, we only put it up on in emergencies. We start using hot water bottles, extra blankets. We bought hoodies, thermal layers to keep ourselves warm while we're in the house so that we don't have to put the heating on as much. I'm also very mindful of where I have to drive to. I try only go to one place if I need to go to a couple of different things. I'm always second guessing myself, wondering, is this strip really essential? I've also tried to stop buying into fast fashion. I know sometimes we have a moment of weakness, and I noticed that charity shops are one of the best places to go to.
We have recently got in the air to water system, which means the house doesn't run on solid fuels, on oil, anything like that. Our stove was taken out, so obviously it's a lot better for the environment. But in terms of the living crisis, you know, we were like, it'll definitely bring the bills down, especially closer to Christmas. But with the price of electricity going up, it's not going to make a whole pile of a difference.
My thanks to Chloe Farrell for that selection of voices right around the Midlands. So what measures are you making at home? Like, I know it's like, even in general, this is an expensive time of year. And I know we are all under pressure. But what changes are you making in your day to day life to try and cut down on those costs so that we can still live in an environmentally friendly and sustainable way, but also take some pressure off of ourselves? I know myself, my immersion got switched off a good while ago now because I'm actually waiting on the electrician to come and fix it. But I've survived without it, to my surprise. And, you know, maybe it's something I need to consider doing year round, only switching it on when I, you know, forget about the timer, just have it off entirely and only use it when I absolutely need to switch it on. And, you know, there's little things. And as a well-known supermarket chain says, every cent counts.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Now, you may have heard a couple of weeks ago, the Cabinet signed off on a new division of the High Court specifically to deal with environment and planning issues. And obviously, these type of cases tend to get a lot of media coverage when they're in the High Court. But now the High Court will have its own special division to, I suppose, to try and manage and corral the workload that's involved. So to discuss this a little bit further, we are joined now by Zoe Richardson of Field Fisher. And Zoe is a solicitor who specialises in this particular area. Zoe, you are very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Aisling. Delighted to join you today.
So Zoe, this new division of the High Court, how exactly do you think it's going to work?
Well, I suppose that's a little bit up in the air. We don't have a huge amount of clarity on exactly how it's going to work. I mean, what the government have proposed or have indicated is going to happen is that there will be a separate or a standalone division of the High Court set up, called essentially the Planning and Environmental Law Court, probably a bit similar to the way the Commercial Court operates at the moment, where it's a standalone division that hears large commercial cases. So that's all we know so far. It seems that it will be resourced with judges who sit on that court and who specialise in planning and environmental cases and to hear all the planning and environmental cases that are brought before the court. And we understand, or it seems there's a suggestion that the court will operate in a sort of primarily remote or online manner.
Oh, I see.
I had a look online at what's being proposed or suggested, and that was one of the indications that seemed to be made, that it would operate largely remotely. At the moment, the courts are certainly doing a lot of their business remotely since the pandemic, and that's been working reasonably well. Planning and environmental cases are sometimes probably more conducive than some other cases to being dealt with remotely, because for the most part, they're judicial reviews, and so they're dealt with on the basis of documentary evidence and legal submissions, and there aren't necessarily witnesses being called. So it is, you know, planning and environmental cases can be conducive to being dealt with remotely. So that's one feature, I suppose, that we may see in the new court. We would hope that, sure, it seems to be suggested that it will be well resourced, and that it will be resourced with judges who are just sitting on this court and who are receiving specialised training and who have specialist expertise in planning and environmental law issues.
Would we have many of that type of judge already, or are we going to see judges being, a number of them being encouraged to do a little bit of CPD on the matter?
It's hard to know. I mean, even at the moment, and obviously we don't have this specialised planning environmental law court as yet, and it hasn't been set up yet, but there is a specialist list, I suppose, in the High Court called, it's kind of known as the commercial planning list, and in that list there are particular judges who sit and hear that list on a regular basis, and they hear that list deals with I suppose large planning and environmental cases where there's a reasonably high value. What that list doesn't deal with at the moment is maybe smaller value cases, judicial reviews of planning and environmental decisions. But it is operating in some ways as a specialist list already, and it is operating in a way where the judges are case managing the list. They're quite strict in terms of timeframes and deadlines for delivery of pleadings and in getting to hearing. So you could say, you know, it's in some ways already operating to some extent, although it's not a formalised planning and environmental court.
So then, Zoe, what kind of cases might be brought before this particular division of the High Court?
I think, you know, again, that hasn't been entirely clarified as yet, and we'll wait to see the more detailed proposals for the court when they're made. But you would expect, I suppose, it to deal with all the planning judicial reviews. So there are a variety, you know, there are probably a large number of judicial review actions being dealt with, which are challenges to planning permissions, either refusals of planning permissions or grants of planning permissions. So you'd expect that it would deal with those types of cases. And also you see a lot of environmental cases before the courts. So, for example, maybe challenges to environmental licenses that might be granted, or challenges to legislation that's brought out by the government. And we've seen a number of challenges to environmental legislation over the last few years. So all those types of cases, you would expect would fall within the remit of the Planning and Environmental Court when it's established.
So, like, I know, like, not to discuss specific cases, but just as an example, say if there was a new motorway being built through the Midlands, but there was, I don't know, a rare snail or something discovered along the route, and the government wanted to go ahead with it, might that be the kind of case that the government
you'd expect? Those are the kinds of cases that, you know, lead to judicial reviews. Obviously, planning applications for planning permission go through a particular process, but ultimately, they are capable of being challenged by way of judicial review in the High Court. So that's a challenge to, I suppose, the decision making process. And you would expect exactly that that's the sort of thing that, if it was challenged, would come before the newly established Planning and Environmental Court.
I know that the Green Party, being in government, they're quite pleased that this initiative is going ahead. Is this something that's in place in other jurisdictions around the world?
It is in place, as I understand it, in a few other jurisdictions. I think Queensland is one example. So there are specialist planning courts and environmental courts in a number of jurisdictions. And I understand that research has been, you know, that they've been looked at when the government was considering the establishment of this court. But I suppose even, on a more localized basis in Ireland, we have the example of the Commercial Court, which has been up and running for quite a number of years now and works very well in terms of sort of efficiently managing large commercial, litigation matters. You would expect that maybe the Planning Environmental Court would operate in somewhat a similar way, where cases would be case managed and, you know, the aim would be to deal with them as efficiently as possible. And perhaps it is a trend maybe, or in terms of how the court system might be looking to the future. I know that the Minister for Justice, I think only last week, announced what seems to be a similar initiative in relation to family law courts, where there'd be a specialised family law division of the court system. So it does seem to be something that's, you know, on the radar, not only in planning and environmental law.
It would seem to make sense that you would have solicitors and barristers and judges that have specialised in this, their chosen area, and that, you know, to go to them then it would nearly be easier for everybody involved if everybody had specialised in environmental and planning issues.
Absolutely, Aisling. I mean, it's a very specialised area of law. It's highly technical, I think. And there are a lot of sort of concepts that are common to most environmental and planning cases, like appropriate assessment and environmental impact assessment. And a lot of those concepts come from EU law, and they're common to most of the cases. So absolutely, having judges with specialist expertise who are dealing with those types of issues on a day-to-day basis would be very helpful. But I suppose, as I said, there is a list at the moment that is operating in quite a specialised way already in relation to large planning and environmental cases.
I know at the beginning of our chat tonight, I focused in on you being a specialist in this particular area, but I'm interested, what made you specialise in environmental and planning issues?
I don't know. I suppose I fell into it a few years ago. There are obviously... there's a lot more focus, I think, in the last few years on environmental issues, a lot of environmental awareness, I suppose. I'd always practiced, I suppose, in the area of regulatory law. So acting for, public sector bodies who, are in a decision making role. And certainly, the bodies who do a lot of planning, environmental decision making are really in focus at the moment in terms of the amount of litigation that there is both in the environmental and planning area. So it's a really interesting area of law, really evolving in that it's very, I suppose, reflective of EU law and EU principles. So it's really, really interesting, and becoming more and more high profile, I suppose, in terms of the increased focus on the environment.
Well, Zoe Richardson of Field Partner at Field Fisher, thank you for speaking with us on the programme this evening.
Thanks very much, Aisling.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands103.com. Of course, you can join us at your time of choosing on your preferred podcast app, whether it be Spotify, Apple, or indeed Google Podcasts. Please do like, subscribe, follow. I'm never quite sure, to be honest. One of those buttons that gives you those notifications as to when our show goes live on your podcast app. Please do select that button. And if you're feeling generous, please do share it with your family, friends and colleagues. Or indeed, on Apple Podcasts, you could even write us a review if you are so inclined. We would appreciate any measure you can to support the show. I should also say that we are always more than delighted to hear from you, our listeners. And if you want to get in contact with me to suggest an item for the show, or even if you want to feature on the show yourself, please do get in contact with me through the Midlands103.com website. Just look for the on-air team, click on Aisling O'Rourke. There's a lovely photograph of me there. And you can click Contact Aisling here and send me a message, and that will get directly to me. You can also contact Midlands 103 by phone on 0818 300 103 and ask to speak to Chloe in the newsroom now that we have Chloe working with us here on the show. She works Monday to Friday during the daytime. I hope you did enjoy our show this evening. Thanks again to all our contributors, and welcome again to Chloe Farrell, who has joined the Let's Go Green team.